This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air, Linda Cohen along with you. Well, according to a new report released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, currently 1 in 68 U.S. children has an autism spectrum disorder, also known as ASD. That's a 30% increase from the 1 in 88 children 2 years ago. These are stunning figures. And here to tell us more about this is Dr. Henry Rowan. He's the G.S. Liptak Professor of Child Development in the Department of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Rowan. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So what does this increase really mean? I mean, what are the theories or reasons for this high uptick in numbers? Is it a real increase, or is it perhaps an artifact based on the fact that we have a broader definition or some other things?
Yeah, it's really hard to change or to tell. The diagnostic criteria changed quite a bit with the most recent iteration of the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual, which is what we use to diagnose psychiatric conditions. And what they've done is cluster a number of previously individual disorders under a broader category of autism spectrum disorders. And so these new data are perhaps affected by that. Another thing is that there's quite a bit of awareness about autism now. And so April's Autism Awareness Month, people turn their porch lights blue to increase autism awareness. And we're inundated with stuff about autism this time of year. And so certainly if more parents are looking for it, more primary care physicians are looking for it, or school personnel are looking for it, then that certainly could drive up those the rates as well.
And also, do we have more comprehensive diagnostic efforts or more comprehensive diagnostic techniques out there?
Sure. There are a number of really interesting developments in the area of diagnosis. There's some folks down at Emory University School of Medicine in Atlanta who have been able to identify signs of autism in kids as early as a few months old in terms of how they make eye contact with certain stimuli. Certainly, we have diagnostic tools that just keep getting better and better. There's a couple of standardized procedures now that you really have to undergo pretty intensive training on how you implement those procedures, and those really serve as the basis of diagnosis. But there is this adage in the sort of the field of autism that says if you've seen one kid with autism, you've seen one kid with autism. And the implication there is that it's a highly variable distribution of traits and individual characteristics underneath that disorder.
That's very interesting. What strikes me here, though, is that there are some things that can be explained on the basis of some of these things we're talking about, artifacts of the way we diagnose or the fact that we do more comprehensive diagnosis or more awareness. But we see things that are kind of hard to explain. For example, why are the rates so much higher in some states than others? I read somewhere that the incidence of autism was as low as 1 in 175 children in Alabama to a high of 1 in 45 in New Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, I read that too, and it's a really interesting thing. And the first thing I thought about when I saw that is that generally Alabama is one of those states that's associated with other factors related to healthcare concerns and public awareness. And I started to question, is that sort of an underlying feature? And I certainly don't have any proof of that, but that, you know, we often see that Alabama is one of the poorest states. It's often associated with poor health outcomes, obesity, things like that. And so it's possible that there's a more systemic issue related to education and specifically patient and parental education.
And healthcare delivery in general.
Exactly, as opposed to the Northeast. And certainly a state like New Jersey, if you look at things like their autism legislation, they've been really at the front of the U.S. in terms of pushing things through. And so that's a very active state compared to some of the states down in the other parts of the country.
The other thing that's interesting is to me is that the profile of these children has changed. I mean, I was involved in a prior life in this world of special needs kids and diagnosis of children with developmental disabilities. Right. And we had a very kind of circumscribed set of criteria for children with autism. And they certainly, at one point, I guess they were not children who were thought to have normal intellectual intelligence.
Right.
And I guess they've said that in this CDC study that nearly half of the children with autism spectrum disorder had average or above average intellectual ability. What are some of your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've been working in this field for roughly 20 years, and when I started, we saw very, very few children who had autism. Most of them had mental retardation, which now is talked about as intellectual disability. I would venture to say at roughly 20% of the kids we saw had autism as a diagnosis. Now it's flipped to an extreme. We very, very rarely see a child clinically who's diagnosed with just intellectual disabilities. Even a child who has a genetic underpinning of their intellectual disability, such as Down syndrome, often now presents with a comorbid diagnosis of autism along with their Down syndrome. So I think there's our definitions of autism have certainly changed over the last 10 to 15 years, and we've also changed how we think about autism. I think when, as you indicated, 10 years ago, we were thinking about autism as a developmental disorder clearly associated with intellectual disabilities, and there were these sort of rare cases where a child might have autism but no intellectual disabilities, and now these new data are saying, well, 50% of the kids don't. Another aspect that could be underlying that is the fact that before the most recent redefinition of autism, we had a separate disorder called Asperger's disorder, and another separate disorder called pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. And those two kind of captured different populations that didn't sort of make the cut, so to speak, diagnostically. Kids with Asperger's were often termed synonymously as high-functioning autism. Now they're all being lumped under this category of autism, and so that certainly could be driving these differences in the IQ range.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Henry Rowan, and we're talking about the rise in autism in this country, or if in fact there is a rise. Why do you think there are more boys than girls?
You know, I don't know. That we see that with other disorders as well, such as ADHD, and even to some extent with intellectual disabilities, but I haven't ever seen any conclusive data suggesting why that is.
So what I'm hearing from you, and I've heard this from other kind of, you know, experts in the field, is that some of this, perhaps a lot of this, can be explained by the way it is that we look at autism these days, and by broadening the whole spectrum to make it a spectrum.
Right.
Many children who are on a continuum of some kind developmentally are now being captured in those data where they would have been excluded from the autism data before. But there seems to be, in addition, an increase beyond that. At least that's what a lot of experts sense. So, I mean, do you have any thoughts? I mean, you know, people have often posited environmental reasons. I'd be curious from your own experience what your thoughts are.
There is a slew of conjectures out there about what causes autism. And I haven't played this game in a while, but I used to periodically Google autism causes, and you'd get something like 9 billion hits. You know, and everybody, it's vaccines, it's diet, it's exposure to these high-wire TV.
Electromagnetics.
And none of those things have really had conclusive evidence. We know there's a genetic predisposition to autism. There's these, what some people call vulnerability genes, that suggest that somebody has the gene for autism, but some kids show the phenotype or the characteristics of autism, other people don't. So that suggests there's also an environmental factor. Is that a maternal health issue where, say, something like maternal age, or there's some data to suggest that exposure to certain medications in the womb could trigger autism, or is it nutrition?
I even read something that said paternal age may be a factor.
Age. And so all of these things, but the bottom line is we don't really know. It's probably most likely a combination of events.
But what we do know, and this is interesting to me as well, is that even though, despite what you described earlier as some earlier attempts at early diagnosis, most of these children are being diagnosed around the age of four.
Right.
And from a developmental standpoint, that's kind of late.
Yep.
And early diagnosis and therefore early intervention is obviously crucial in any developmental problem.
Right.
What are you seeing in terms of that? How are kids being diagnosed in your experience?
Well, it's real interesting. You know, it's not like having a medical disorder where you can do a blood test and test if a certain pathogen is in your bloodstream and say, okay, well, you have that disease. Autism's not like that. It's to some extent, a subjective diagnosis in many cases. And so what one provider sees as autism, another provider might not see. And frankly, we see that quite a bit with parents where a doctor said maybe it's autism, asked for a second opinion, and it's not very conclusive.
What are the kinds of things, though, if you were talking to a group of parents, that they should be on the lookout for? What would be some kind of signs or symptoms?
A very early sign is the lack of sustained eye contact, especially to visually interesting things. A slow progression or maldevelopment of speech formation, so not making just the very basic babbling sounds or making one repetitive sound and not adding additional sounds to that. In older children, you might see very scriptive or repetitive movements. And generally, the lack of social relatedness is one of the core features of autism, along with the communication deficits and restricted behaviors.
It sounds to me like we need more people on the front lines. If we're waiting till age four to diagnose this, there need to be more pediatricians, healthcare providers of all stripes, sensitive to some of these issues and aware of them early on, as well as getting parents aware. Mm-hmm. And I guess in your experience, what do you think is happening? Do you think that that is likely, and what's happening in terms of treatment here?
I think we're trying very hard to do that here at Upstate. Just to give you a couple of examples, we've recently hired and plan on bringing in July a developmental pediatrician who's going to cross-train in our general pediatrics clinic. And the idea behind that is that we're going to have someone in general pediatric clinic seeing just kids who come in for well child visits who is familiar with this disorder and can help diagnosis. We're also building additional early intervention evidence-based programs here in Syracuse to augment some of the other treatment programs that we have. So these really young kids start to get evidence-based treatment at a very early age.
So it's early identification, and you are now providing treatment.
Right, an early intervention.
Tell us a little bit, in the little bit of time we have left, about what kind of treatment you're offering.
Sure. We're doing treatment that's really in conjunction with the state autism insurance reform that was passed, where the evidence suggests that behaviorally-based early intervention procedures coming in at about 25 to 40 hours a week of very intensive one-on-one therapy is effective at changing the trajectory of the course of autism for really young kids. So we've started to do that at an off-site clinic here in Upstate.
What ages are you beginning to work with?
Generally 0 to 6. So really, really young kids up to about age 6.
Wow. Well, in your experience, have you seen positive results with this kind of treatment?
Absolutely.
Protocol?
You generally see anywhere from 25 to 40 hours a week, you start to see changes in basic things like IQ score and general compliance and production of speech and a number of other pro-social behaviors that are generally deficits of autism.
So despite the fact that it's growing in number, you're saying that we are developing treatment protocols that can make a difference.
Absolutely. We need to be developing training programs, too, that train more practitioners, both at the pediatrics level, but also at sort of the direct care provider level, who can do the therapies that have been shown in the literature to make a difference.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in and speculating, hypothesizing, and offering this very hopeful news about some new treatment options.
Happy to do it.
My guest has been Dr. Henry Rowan. He is the G.S. Liptak Professor of Child Development in the Department of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. Once again, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.